Hey, Evidence Locker listeners. We hope that you're all safe and healthy and hanging in there during these strange times. Unfortunately for us, we've hit a slight road bump, and there's not a regular episode this week. We will be back on a regular publishing schedule from next week again, but we don't want to leave you hanging, so we've compiled a list of our listeners' questions, which myself and Sonia will try to answer as best as we can. Hey, Sonia.
Hey, Noel. How you doing today?
Well, I can't complain. I've been seeing the inside of my house for the past three and a half weeks. Been very creative, been very insane at the same time. How about you?
Oh, same business, really.
At the end of the day, you know what? It's interesting to think that this is some crazy stuff we're going through, but there's never been a time where I felt that I've had more time to be creative. It's a sort of interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, it is interesting times. Not much has changed in my life because I'm still working at home, researching, writing scripts every day. It's just, I suppose, the extra spin on it that my house is full of other people now.
Now, do you think you've increased your coffee intake or have you
maintained? I'm still very strict on my one a day.
Good girl. Good girl. I'm headed down. It might turn back into the energy drinks for me if I don't watch myself.
But anyway, I'll start with the first question from one of our listeners.
Sure.
It says, who are you and what are you doing in life? Are you a student, a worker? I'm genuinely curious.
Well, I guess, Sonia, we both would agree that we've sort of been all of the above in that particular question. Who am I? Well, I'm Noel Vinson. I guess I'm just a voice on your favorite podcast. I come from a music background. A lot of people might be surprised to know, but during my 20s, I'd like to say that I was quite a proficient hip-hop artist, rapper, Big Brother's Watching You, Rage Against the Machine type material. As I've gotten older and more mature, I've set those sights on filmmaking, and that's sort of how, you know, I met you, Sonia, was through just pursuing filmmaking. We both worked at a glorious tech shop who shall remain named as Apple. and you know, one day I was new there, and they put me on the front door, and I was to just help somebody named Sonia out at front door. As people were coming in.
Because Sonia always needed some help.
Well, you know, we worked at Apple. I won't say the store, but darn it, that store would not stop. That was just constant traffic. But during the busyness at one of the lulls that we had, we just sort of, you know, we're just, you know, just shooting the shit and come to find out that Sonia came from a television background. So from there, it was just sort of the genuine organic conversations that come out about that. And it was like, oh, you're interested in film. I am too. I'm a writer. Oh, I'm trying to write. And, you know, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, I just, for me personally, I always felt that Sonia had my back within the Apple ecosystem and just trying to find my way. And it just, you know, naturally grown from there. And we made a film. Sonia directed it. I wrote it.
Yeah, Noel wrote it, and we actually did pretty well with that one. It won a local...
We won Audience Choice Award for Best Australian Short Film. But let's just be real, it was an international horror film festival, so one of the coolest ones. So I think, you know, it's a pat on the back. It's very nice. We got a trophy.
Yeah, we got a trophy to show for it that we have shared custody over. Which reminds me...
Sorry, guys. This is what we do. So our second question, people's reactions when they know that you have a true crime podcast.
Oh, well, so surprisingly, they're not surprised. So, yeah, as you said, you from a rapping background and I'm from a TV background, but I am from the outside in. I'm pretty much a soccer mom. So it's interesting that people aren't really surprised. It's like something goes in their minds, that explains it.
It does.
it's like everyone thinks, I always knew there was something dark about this girl.
You know,
this woman.
I got to say, Sonia, I've never known such a lovely person with such a darkness to her. No, I'm just kidding.
How about you? If they hear you, the voice of a true crime podcast, what do people say to you?
Well, I guess, yeah, I've never gotten a wow or like a jaw drop to the ground. It's more like a, oh, okay, all right. I guess that would make sense. It sort of blends the filmmaking aspect with the musician aspect in podcasting in a way. You know, you're still telling stories.
In the end, it comes down to storytelling in whichever way I feel.
Yeah, so
And storytellers won't be silent.
So, I mean, the only time I think, and I, it has yet to happen to me, is to walk into a place and be like, oh, you're the host of the evidence locker? Yeah, I'm waiting for that moment, people.
Yeah, come on, people. Come on. There's not too many American accents around Sydney.
Bring it.
Okay, and then there's let's move on to our next question. It's, how did you guys get into true crime or serial killers?
That could be a bit, I guess, a potential long-winded rabbit trail of an answer, right?
Yeah, it's just, I guess, I mean, I've always watched this sort of thing. When I was probably around 10 or 11, which I suppose is a bit young, I snuck out of my bedroom to watch Unsolved Mysteries with my older brother.
Right.
And yeah, it just really intrigued me, and it really just sort of played on my mind. So what happened here? What could it be? What could it be? And it's really mysteries that got me first. And then, of course, your sort of Nancy Drews or those sort of stories
Right. Also
intrigued me. My husband was really concerned. He sort of said, dude, you're just watching so much of this. What is this obsession that you have? And I read up about it a little bit, and it said it's the same part of your brain that likes building jigsaw puzzles. So it's problem solving.
Oh, sure. I guess that would make sense, right? But I mean, I've even asked you that question. Like, I mean, it's so much of this sort of energy that you research.
Yeah.
And it's not like a positive energy, because it's some crazy, crazy things you got to delve into and, you know, fact check and just, you get some crazy details that not the average person would be willing to go and sift through, you know?
Yeah.
I think for me, and just a little bit of a note, because of the filmmaker aspect, it always goes back to film for me. So for me, horror films when I was a kid, like, they scared me, but they intrigued me. So those shows like Unsolved Mysteries and like even America's Most Wanted, they were like horror films to me, but they were real. So that made them even scarier. They're bad people, you know what I mean? So there was this intrigue behind that. I always have this moment in my life, and I talk to people about it, because I don't know much of the zeitgeist at the time, only in hindsight, because I was like 4 years old. But I remember specifically my mom and my neighbor talking to my mom. We lived in Orange County in Garden Grove, and they were talking about the Night Stalker, and that we had to go in and we had to keep the windows shut and we had to lock the doors. And at 4 years old,
wow.
I don't know what the Night Stalker is, but what I do know is it sounds bad. And I'm getting chills talking about
it. The boogeyman's out there.
Yeah, it's boogeyman. I'm getting chills talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's bringing back those emotions of hearing that word. It's, you know, it's one of those things. So I think coming from that, it's always been intriguing.
And it's sort of that characterization, right? And I think the things, and I still see that also in our episodes that are the more popular ones, it's that human interest that, oh my goodness, this could actually happen to me.
Well, it evokes our primal needs, right? Our safety. And when you think of, you feel you're safe with your husband, but you're not, you know, it's crazy to think about. Like, you would never want to be in that situation, but it definitely is that what if.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next question. What is your pet case or favorite case of what doesn't have to be one we've done? What's yours, Noel?
I mean, there's probably a couple reasons to this. I would say our first one. The first one, when I drove down to you, and we were going to give it a go. And that's the tent killings at Lake Apajora in Sweden. For me, outside of the case itself, it's because it was our first one. It was when I really knew what you had in for me with you know, going and researching cases that aren't necessarily in English. Ergo word pronunciations and things like that, because there are a few of those. No, but Lake Apajora, it was as far as evidence locker was getting our feet wet, right? There's just a little bit, I know now how my energy, my vibe is when it's time to sit down to do an evidence locker episode. I didn't have that then. Like, I remember stumbling over so many things in that first episode.
Yeah.
And that makes it that more, much more endearing to me. Now, as far as why it's a favorite case too, is it, you know, like, it's the echo of the Lake Bodom and Finland killings. It seems like it could be a copycat. You know what I mean? But whereas Lake Bodom gets so much press, if you will, I never knew about this. I never heard about this, you know, and it's so scary to think about an intruder coming. It's Jason. It's like Jason from Friday the 13th. Yeah. Somebody's coming in with this big old knife stabbing through the tent. So there's that aspect of it as well that I find intriguing, and the fact that it's unsolved, and you know, and even Lake Bottom is unsolved. It's crazy.
And just the scenery of the spot and everything. It is really, it's one of the, and because it's unsolved again, I think it sort of plays on your mind and what could have happened there. Who was this person that did it? And the different theories, and you still keep wondering what actually happened there. And I agree with you. There's a sentimentality, and it was our first episode, and oh yeah, that sort of set the tone for Evidence Locker going forward.
Yeah, it definitely did.
And just while we're talking about my pet case or the favorite case, one of our podcasting friends, Bill Huffman, has a series that you should really listen to. It's called My Passion Case. He actually interviews different true crime podcasters, and I mean, he's spoken to the guys from Gen Y. He's from True Crime Garage, Criminology Pod. He's spoken to everyone, and we were very lucky to hear from Bill, and he spoke with us. And the case we discussed there, just because it is local to
Sydney,
where we live in Australia, was Ivan Milat and the Backpacker Killer. So Bill's second series is coming out, and we'll be in one of those episodes. So yeah, that is. Let's say no more.
Just will say one thing. I gotta say, it was a very enjoyable conversation that we had with Bill. So kudos to you, Bill. And I really, really, really wish we could have made it to CrimeCon this year. I was really looking forward to shaking his hand, you know, and meeting some of our other colleagues.
It's at this point. It's in October, and if it's not in October, it'll be at a later point, and we will do our best to be there.
You realize we would have been leaving next week. Just saying.
We would have been leaving on the 29th of April.
But instead, we will just be doing more episodes and hopefully no technical difficulties. All right, so next question. This is a good one for you, Sonia. What is one case that you will absolutely not cover?
Oh, no-brainer. Mark Dutro. That's that pedophile in Belgium. The story just has so many layers. I don't even want to talk about it. It's such a dark case. It's a whole pedophile ring. This guy kidnapped kids. It's horrendous. If I read it, I want to vomit. Couple of people asked us to cover the case before. I'm really sorry. I think if I dig into that case, I will lose all my faith in humanity.
So that will be the one
that'll be the one that'll break me. That'll be, I think that'll be the last one I'll ever do then.
Okay.
It's so dark. I've skimmed over it, and there's just no way I'm going there. Not as a mother. I can't.
Wasn't he released as well?
I think he escaped at one point, I think what is scary about that case is he keeps implicating more and more. So this ring is bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's just everywhere.
Okay.
And that is an extreme thing that makes me, that'll give me sleepless nights.
Then you don't get sleepless nights already.
I do sometimes, or nightmare nights. I do get them.
Because I'll say some of them, like, give me a chill and give me, like, if I were to really think about it, I probably would have some trouble falling asleep on some of these cases that we've profiled.
There were two that really got to me. The one was the Matamoros. So
yep, that's one of mine, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so that was the one that really got to me. That one gave me nightmares. And then the Monster of Italy.
Oh, the Il Mostro.
And with Monster of Italy, it was... Yes, what got me there too was how many bad things. So they haven't caught the guy, but they caught many probable other people who also did terrible stuff. So it's again just pulling at that thread and exposing more horrors from on different levels throughout our community.
Right.
So that one got under my skin too. And the thing is, you don't know. Sometimes I am able to dissociate from it, and other times it really gets to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things, like, one thing I got to hand to Sonia is that it's not just the darkest of the murders and things like that. You know, you research some heists, you know, and things that are
just to mix it up. I think the heists, that diamond one, I sort of enjoyed a little bit because you were kind of rooting for the thieves.
Yeah, no, it's like an Italian job type of thing.
And that was Ocean's 11. That was pretty much the whole plot for Ocean's 11 was that Leonardo Dio Bartolo or something.
Oh, I can't think of his name.
That was interesting. And I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed our two Christmas, the Alaska slaying plot that was spoiled. That was also a bit unsettling. It was a little dark corner of the world.
That was a scary one to me. That one does put a little chill in my spine, even though it was foiled. But I like the Mesa, Arizona.
Oh, for sure. I'd actually love to just do a short film on that little episode. I think that would be so. There's our challenge, though. Why don't we do that one?
Okay, we need to hire a plane and a person to jump out of the
plane. That's just a mannequin.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, the whole point I wanted to just say was kudos to you, because even though we do a lot of the dark stuff, which is the stuff that intrigues me most, it's nice to still get a bit of a balance with, say, the heists, with the standard gangs and whatnot, to like the Christmas episodes.
Thanks, Noel. But it is, I mean, I got some comments on some reviews or somewhere, I don't know, someone said, oh, they wish they'd been warned about this or that. Dudes, if you are sensitive listeners, this isn't the show for you. It's marked explicit on the iTunes. You have consider yourself warned.
Nor is true crime the genre for you. Like, why would you even go there? I don't know. But next question. Sonia, what is your favorite crime documentary, book, series, or film?
Well, the crime documentaries, I always like the Dateline ones of Keith Morrison. That's sort of my stop and stand go-to. Then your documentary series sort of thing. I really like the Tanya Rada one, Shadow of Truth, just the style that it was done in.
Sure.
And now our recent case, the Rajneeshi case, Wild Wild Country, it was really well done.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and there's for crime series, anything Nordic noir, I am besotted with it. Anything Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, you had me at
Finnish,
at Hay,
at Wallander.
You had me at Wallander, The Killing, the Danish version, but also the American, The Killing was amazing. Then the Swedish, The Bridge. That one's just next level. And then as far as novel goes, I think you know who's my favorite crime novelist, Noel.
That's Joe. Big old Joe Nesbo.
It's Joe. There can be only one, Joe Nesbo and Haru Hula. And then, yeah, what about you?
Of course, I got to bring it to the filmmaker. I mean, you named a lot of good documentaries. I liked, the Ted Bundy documentary that Netflix put out, in his own words, that was really interesting.
Was really good, and it was good seeing that before the film.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say that Zac Efron did a really good job as Ted too. He definitely creeped me out more than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, people say that he was too good looking, but I mean, that was the thing with Ted. Even now in photos, you think it's not that great, but at the time, with his style, with his little curly hair, whatever, he was hot. He was charming, and that's the thing. I mean, that was what made it so scary, is that someone that charming and smooth could be so devious.
Well, that's the thing, too. And we always say it's always in the eyes. And I don't think, I mean, if we're talking about the film, Zac Efron, what he did, I don't see the demon in his eyes, but he got this glazed look when he that came across that was able to confer that, you know?
That was very unsettling. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like he sort of went into a zone, and that was very unsettling.
Yeah, and I was surprised. I had to respect it, you know? Like, it was good. The two movies I just want to shout out, the ones that will always be pinnacle for me, nothing's ever going to take their place for crime, type of films. First for me is the original Dirty Harry from 1971. I'm obsessed with it. Scorpio is the craziest villain ever in the history of film, in my opinion. And then the second one, Seven, David Fincher, obviously.
Wow, yeah. I actually wouldn't mind watching that again.
Those two, I hope to be able to do something one day that has that. What those do to me, I hope to have that sort of impact on others because they just blow me away.
As a filmmaker.
Not in the crime, within the film. No way.
Let's just get that out there.
Please don't put words into my mouth, people. but yeah, no, that's what that is. Next question, Sonia, what makes you focus on lesser known cases from all around the world?
Well, I think both you and I, we're expats living in a foreign, essentially foreign country to where we were born. So I'm from South Africa originally, you're from the States, and we both live in Australia, if you haven't connected the dots in this conversation yet. I think it's really interesting to see how different legal systems work and attitudes towards certain crime. But in the end, there's one common thread, and we're all human, and wrong is wrong, and evil is evil. And so the cases are the same. Doesn't matter which culture you're from, what language you speak. And then also, of course, I like choosing these cases because I am a bit of a sadist, and I do love asking you to pronounce very different.
I've noticed. Yeah, I'm.
Which are some of the most difficult ones for you?
Okay, so Spetsiev, that one comes to mind, which is also just a very memorable case in its own right. So if the two that come to mind,
I actually suggested, just a side note. My brother said the other day he was going to build a jigsaw puzzle and listen to Evidence Locker, and I said, listen to the to the Russian one.
Sasha.
And then and every time you say Spetsiev, he has to have a shot of vodka. So that's a nice little drinking game for you.
Oh my, like, yeah, but you gotta be like, you get vodka when you get Spetsiev right. And then you gotta do tequila when you get it wrong.
Well, I think you can only say it easier after a shot of vodka.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's almost like not wearing a seatbelt in a crash. You have more of a chance to survive. But there is another one though, Sonia. One that even potentially can trump Spetsiev. And for me, somebody who knows how to pronounce Spanish words, La Mata Viejitas. That episode was a mouthful. Like, oh my God.
And there were so many names. And also the Icelandic ones were pretty tough.
Those are tough. Yeah, those are actually tough.
We had an Icelandic friend that pre-recorded some things and we tried to copy it and it was just really tough. And then the Polish ones were pretty rough too. But again, we had a Polish friend that recorded some of the clip, the names for us, that we managed to get around a little bit easier than the Icelandic ones.
But even so, but yeah, I'm saying them and my mouth has not formulated certain vowel systems from other languages. And there's just, you know.
All I can promise our listeners is, guys, we really do try and we really do try to be respectful. And we just never want to get into a point where we say, well, oh, we don't even know how to pronounce it, so we won't even do it.
Might as well issue
so, then it loses the whole poignance. But please bear with us. It will be impossible for us to get absolutely from Swahili to French to Spanish.
To Finnish, even.
To Finnish. To get everything right, so we do try. And I mean, if
because even in the episodes where they get, we do get them right, I guarantee you there's at least 10 to 15 attempts of getting it wrong.
And then let's go on to the next question. Is there a case you think that everyone or the majority of people got wrong?
Well, the one that comes to mind, I think the majority of people who weren't on the case would side with us is, I think, Bruno Ludka. That's just this poor guy, you know? He might have looked the part.
Absolutely.
It's judging books by their cover, and somebody who's trying to climb the ranks, finding a almost like a perfect situation for him to lay out the scenario that would get him to climb the ranks and pin all sorts of crimes on just the wrong guy.
No, absolutely. That one, I think it was a gross miscarriage of justice. And it's a pity that he's gone down in history as a terrible serial killer. I mean, question beckons, the worst German serial killer. Yeah, worse than Hitler.
Well, when you put it into those terms, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's exactly what it was. It was just finding a scapegoat, someone else to put attention on. But yeah, I think, I honestly don't think he did that.
And how we got it to the end too. Oh my God. Like,
I mean, the medical experiments and everything, that's just brutal. And then there's another case, it is the Nicky Verstappen case, the Dutch boy who was taken from his tent. And there's just something that's not sitting right with that one. I know that they've arrested Jos Brecht. He's not, I mean, he's by no means,
not innocent.
I think he's not an innocent person, but I just feel that there's, we got chills when we recorded this case, and I said to you, I just have this feeling that there's something that's either not being publicized or there's just something to that case that's still not right. And I'm not quite sure what it is, but I keep an eye for Google alerts on all our cases that we do. So I mean, if there are, that court case is still dragging on.
Is DeFries still investigating?
Yeah. So he's still pleading not guilty, and then that's Jos Brecht, and then he said, well, there's something more to the story. And I don't know if that's just he's sort of smoke and mirrors to avoid his sentencing, but we will keep you posted on that one.
Well, I think to wrap up, I think those are great questions. I actually really enjoyed answering some of these questions. It's kind of a nice break. So maybe our difficulties were meant to be. you never know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there are things happening in isolation. We are finding new ways of doing things, and there's new methods and new format. So I also enjoyed chatting to you. I always do enjoy chatting to you.
Because we're crazy.
But it is because we're both crazy. Thanks for listening. We'd actually love to hear what you thought. If you want to comment on any of our questions, or if you have any more, do send them along, and we might even consider a second Q&A episode.
That would sound good. And that's it. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to this episode of The Evidence Locker. We will meet you at the same time, same place next week with a new case. Be safe.